I'm Andy Thompson, Senior Editor of Private Debt Investor, and welcome to the Private Debt Investor podcast. For today's episode, I sat down with Darius Creighton, a director at Raymond James Sabeel Capital, a private fund placement and secondaries advisory specialist. Creighton reflects on PDI's fundraising data for 2023, providing insights into why it was a difficult year for those raising fresh capital, but also why 2024 is shaping up to be more fruitful. To hear more of our episodes, head to privatedebtinvestor.com/podcast, or you can search and subscribe to the Private Debt Investor podcast wherever you like to listen. Well, I'm delighted to be here with Darius Creighton of Raymond James this morning. At Private Debt Investor, we obviously produce our regular fundraising analyses. And maybe we could start off, Darius, just by looking back over 2023. That was, I think, an unusual year in many ways. Obviously, there is, as we know, a lot of appetite for alternative assets in general, including private debt. But 23 was in many ways, it seemed to me, a challenging year. And that came through very clearly in our data, where we saw capital raised falling to a 7-year low. So maybe we could use that as our starting point, your reflections on that and what you would attribute that decline to.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. And, you know, I think it's what we're seeing, you know, across private debt is kind of similar to what we're seeing across the entire industry, in which 2023 was a bit down in terms of especially the number of funds raised. You know, you're thinking about the two metrics, number of funds raised and the aggregate capital raised, you know, where you were seeing a little bit of a down year in 2023, especially as it compared to 2021 and 2022. I think part of that was when you think of the dynamic, which was coming out of the pandemic, where you had a lot of these fundraises either delayed, lengthened out, or put on hold, right? Nobody wanted to, if they didn't have to, come into the market during that time just because of all the restrictions that were happening and all the uncertainty. So what you saw is this wave of fundraisings come out of that, right? Those that were still in the market were trying to wrap up, those that were then launching post that period. So you saw a big influx of managers come to market. What wasn't kind of keeping up with that is how much time investors had, right? You know, they were increasing their teams. So you saw this huge amount of competition, a lot of funds coming out, come to market, and LPs being a bit overwhelmed in terms of what they could focus on. And so what we did see was a little bit kind of that flight to quality, right? The concentration of capital being focused on some of the fewer, larger managers. So at the data that we're kind of looking at, you know, I think you're right. The number of funds raised in 2023 was quite low. The aggregate capital was actually, you know, not as high as 2021 and 2022, but not on the same levels as previous and still raised. And so what it was is that concentration of capital at the large end, which, you know, it's tough for the industry as a whole, but you know, the blue chip managers still seem to raise and raise successfully.
Interesting. Just to bring it from that sort of broad view down to your own personal level, what were you seeing last year, you know, as a business at Raymond James, you personally? Was that very much in line with what the data would suggest, or were your experiences a little different? And what kind of things did you see happening in the market as you worked your way through your pipeline of mandates in 23?
Absolutely. I think our experiences were much, very much in line with what we were seeing kind of in the broader market, where, as I talked about, that flight to quality. So as a business, we do work with some of the larger end of the market. You know, we tend to have probably between 10 to 15 engagements at any given time at various stages. And at that point, we probably have 2 to 3 in the mega cap. We think about 10 billion plus type managers. And we'd seen some success, you know, with there. We work with CDNR across there, very successful fundraiser, you know, raised 26 billion. And we work with the likes of Warburg Pincus and working with Apax, et cetera. We also worked a lot in the middle market. You know, the history of the bank and a lot of their experience is in that the middle market and the strength of that. We were seeing a lot of inflow in terms of client need, et cetera, because it comes back to that competition piece. A lot of people are coming to market and understanding how difficult the environment was in terms of fundraising. And that's where, as advisors and placement agents, we come in and really trying to get people above that noise, right? How do you create a narrative? And so we were finding it was a very difficult year. 2023, there were a lot of closings and transactions that we had hoped would clear in the 2023 time period that got pushed back a little bit. Luckily, we've seen those transactions come through in 2024 and a lot of great forward momentum, but the overall kind of experience in 2023 was that of LPAs not having time, being overwhelmed by both fund opportunities as well as other transactions in the market, secondaries, et cetera. So getting their attention and getting the slots in their timetable was the name of the game for 2023.
Yeah, you talk about getting attention there. And at the strategic level, it seems that, you know, some strategies at the moment are getting more attention than others. Looking back at 2023, although it was a challenge overall to raise capital, we did note that there were a couple of areas that did seem to be, you know, standing up to the conditions pretty well. Subordinated and mezzanine debt, for example, not necessarily raising a lot in terms of quantum of capital, but increasing its share of the market. What would you, and I guess junior capital kind of comes and goes depending on the cycle. What would you have attributed that to last year?
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, talking to my colleagues who are focused on having those direct conversations with LPs, they find it a little bit surprising that Mez had been at the fore in 2023. They kind of thought of it as quote unquote old news, or, you know, the things that it falls sometimes in that midway between, right? You're kind of getting private debt type returns, but taking buyout type risk. And so it was really interesting to see kind of what was that dynamic was happening. And I think where you start to see portfolio construction come in, people trying to beat their benchmarks, those sub debt, you know, mezzanine strategies being able to return a little bit higher, people are looking for yielding strategies in this kind of market where distributions have been low. You can kind of see maybe that push towards maybe some higher alpha generating strategies to complement, as you say, still a smaller part of the overall market. And I was just looking at the data this morning, and you think about the three managers, I think, that raised in 23, I think it was Goldman Sachs, Crescent, and HPS, they represented 80% of the market. You know, those three together raised, you know, over 30 billion out of the 38 kind of the data I saw. So again, it's really concentrating, and two of them were raising their fund eight. And it's going back to that kind of theme in which a lot of people pick their managers. And when they come back, they kind of re-up with them. And it's that general thought of quality that they went through. So again, it's the rich getting richer or the big getting bigger. That really kind of is an interesting dynamic to see in the Mez, where it's really concentrated on a very few number of GPs.
Yeah. And another strategy that's interesting to us is distressed. And I suppose there's also a lot of kind of quasi-distressed type strategies, call them what you will, there's a lot of different labels. But that was an interesting one as well, because distressed fundraising last year was pretty much in line with the previous couple of years. There was no real sign of a resurgence in distressed fundraising. And we haven't seen that come through in our data since 2019, which was the biggest year for distressed fundraising for some time. May even have been the record year, actually. But there is a lot of talk, obviously, given the way that interest rates have shot up and the inflationary pressures and so on. There's unsurprisingly a lot of talk about distressed and opportunistic. So would you find that surprising that that's not yet coming through in the fundraising data?
Yeah, going back to my history, you know, coming back from my days in Cambridge Associates and thinking about those market cycles. And so I'm very much a proponent and a student of a diversified approach of portfolio construction. And so, you know, distressed always had a place in the portfolio. But what you found was it's an extremely difficult, it's more about market timing, right? You know, you're looking for large macro dislocations, which are notoriously hard to time. And if you don't have the capital to deploy, you're not going to be able to take advantage of these really point-in-time opportunities. And so especially, I mean, I joined Cambridge Associates back in 2009. So obviously coming out of the GFC, there was a huge amount of interest, especially with the new regulations coming in, banks expected to divest out of a lot of different assets. And, you know, distress was a big thing. And as a result, you saw a lot of these funds raise very large funds, but not necessarily have the exact opportunities come out. That never materialized. And so you had all this huge war chest developed without the opportunity to do. So I think for kind of that theme kind of sticks true for me. It's a very hard thing to time. And you have to have a pretty strong view or hopefully a clear crystal ball in being able to do it. So I don't know. For me, it's from an investor side, you usually get it wrong, right? When you think, you know, I'm interested in distress, it's because those are when the opportunities are. And by the time those fundraising, it usually passes along. So for me, it's just a hard one to time. And so you're starting to see the market and the fundraising not necessarily be synced up completely.
Yeah. Turning to sort of the geographic focus of fundraising, we've noticed particularly I mean, I suppose the general trend is true across all of asset classes, but alternative asset classes. But in terms of private debt, it seems to be, if anything, even more acute, that a lot of the fundraising is focused on North America. And that's certainly what we found last year. If anything, North America was accounting for an even larger proportion of fundraising than it normally does. I think partly because, you know, Europe had its own particular issues. You know, obviously there was the Ukraine situation, there had been supply chain issues, there were various things, economic issues that seemed to be quite particular to the European context. And then also you have a situation in Asia Pacific where private debt is still very nascent and not really gaining that traction on the fundraising side that you might hope that it would. So it points to a situation where, you know, there's more and more of this North America bias. I just wonder if that's a potential issue for the asset class. Does it really matter that there's that sort of concentration, or would we be hoping to see more of a development or more of a boost to the asset class in other places?
Absolutely. And I think it's a very interesting dynamic when you think about on a global level what is happening. And you think about from our perspective where the largest concentration or the largest collection of LP and therefore capital is still going to be the US. It's the widest, it's the deepest market. And I think a big part of kind of when you're thinking about, especially when you think about private debt allocation, a lot of people don't necessarily allocate outside of US denominated funds. Because of that, currency risk can quite easily swamp the liquidity or the liquidity premium that you would be getting from a private. These are generally lower returning strategies. And so that part of it, you're not going to see as many, as you say, non-US denominated. So you're going to see, I think, that concentration within the US continue. And that makes sense in that regard. But what we're also seeing, you think about in even across Europe, there was more appetite for, call it, you know, Anglo-Saxon law geographies. So the UK, the US, Australia, Canada, in terms of understanding the regulatory or the other frameworks about some of these strategies, even in developed markets. So you think about the Nordics or Germany or France, whatever it might be, there's more interest from an LP side on those jurisdictions where you can have probably a clear understanding of how things might work out. All of those dynamics are especially true when you're thinking about Asia or emerging markets, that both the regulatory side as well as then the currency aspect are headwinds for, you know, that market to develop. Personally, I think that the region, you know, you think about India, China, going forward, those economies, the developing population, I think you need to be focused on that side of the world because of the set of opportunities that are going to come out of that. That's not just in private debt, but across the entire market. I think you're going to see them be the drivers of the future. And that would mean a developing regulated banking industry when you have specialty lenders come in as well, where you have that more developed aspect. I think that will only grow. But as you say, still nascent, and people are still probably have a home bias and where they feel comfortable in terms of that legal framework as well.
Yeah. You kindly set aside time this morning, but you were making the point before we sat down that you're pretty busy at the moment. So it brings us on to, you know, the opening months of this year, really. And I suppose in a lot of the conversations we were having, it did come through that whilst 2023 was a challenge, there was a sense that 2024 things would begin to pick up, not necessarily spectacularly so, but there would be some sort of upward trajectory. So very interested to hear what you're seeing in these first few months of 2024. Our first quarter data will come out soon and we'll have some indication of it through that as well. So any observations that you could provide in terms of the quantum of fundraising would be interesting, as well as, you know, what sort of trends you're seeing developing in the market right now.
Absolutely. And I think 2024 is off to a promising start. As you say, 2023 was challenging and challenged for us and challenging across the market. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, my colleagues were doing, talking to people, our peers, those that are also in it, and they're also seeing some uplifts and some positive momentum in that fundraising. So you think about some of our own engagements, we're coming up to some final closes, which have been hard yards, right, to really work through. Timelines have stretched out, people need more, LPs need more time to kind of really dig in. But we've been able to reach target and at times kind of getting towards more above and being oversubscribed to some of these targets, which quite frankly, you know, you think about 12, 18 months ago, that for some of these strategies, we would have thought that that wouldn't be something that we'd be looking forward to achieving. But we're starting to see that. And I think that's true for quite a lot of the industry, where they're starting to see that pick up in 2024, maybe hopefully some more positive momentum in the M&A markets, some of those exits opportunities starting to open up, more capital hopefully returning back into their private portfolios, which are helping that commitment pacing. I think it's during times of uncertainty, people batten down the hatches a little bit. I think we're coming out of that a little bit more. So we're starting to see quite a few, as you said, positive trends in terms of just the quantum people doing the subdocs, and also some stuff in terms of budgeting, et cetera. You'll start to see some in 2024, the beginning part, as you know, they didn't have allocations in 23. They move into 24 and stuff are transacting. But so far, some good green shoots in terms of what we're looking at.
And is that, are you seeing that across the board, or is there a sort of clamor at the moment for particular strategies or markets?
It's seemingly across the board. I mean, as I say, we have a pretty well diversified series of engagements from the lower mid market. So you think anything sub a billion to the mid market and then and the larger side. We're seeing successful closes across the piece. You know, I think the ones that are probably facing the most challenge are the ones that have the most competition. So you think about those that are probably in the buyout space in the 4 billion to, you know, range. There are so many in that 2 to 6 billion range that is just a hard conversation. You know, how do you differentiate yourself? There's a lot of capital being deployed. There's a lot of opportunities there. But I think in terms of just that is a space, if you're not really have an edge or a way to differentiate yourself, that's been harder. When you go down further down niche, you are finding pockets of capital. So, you know, healthcare might be a sector that is rising. Industrials, as tech, you know, people have their fill of tech, and then as valuations have been quite high, you're starting to see other sector specialists, which tend to be smaller funds just by nature of them being sector specialists, starting to see a lot of interest. So we're seeing across the board opportunities and pockets of opportunities.
Yeah, probably quite hard to predict or extrapolate from this, but you know, if we're looking ahead to sort of the end of 2024, you know, what's your sense of what year it might turn out to be on the fundraising front? I'm guessing an improvement on 23 is probably a safe prediction, but I don't know, a record setter or something more modest?
I think something more modest. I think we were seeing year on year increases in terms of both capital raised and funds raised. And as a result, you were seeing dry powder year on year is reaching record highs, and that's not coming down. And so there's a lot of capital out there to be deployed, and you can only feed that beast so much. You know, there are limited opportunities at the end of the day. The opportunities are finite. And so I think there's a return, maybe quote unquote, to normal. I think there's going to be a better year or some positive momentum in it. You know, to sit here in March and say it's going to be a record setting year, I think there's enough uncertainty still in terms of rates, in terms of inflation, in terms of geopolitical issues that are still pervasive. So I think it's everyone's still a little bit cautious, optimistically cautious. I think there's coming back to it. So I think we can see a positive year this year, but maybe not. I always hope for a record-setting year being in the industry, but I think it'll be more of a modest year.
Just focusing on private debt specifically, I wonder if you're seeing any increasing appetite there. We obviously keep track of all the commitments on an ongoing basis that are made to private debt funds. And still, I would say the flow that we're seeing, again, coming back to the previous point, is largely North American pensions accounting for a very large proportion of the commitments. But we see some quite interesting trends. For example, recently, we've seen some money coming out of the Middle East, maybe in a way that it hasn't done previously. So we're wondering if there's some new appetite for the asset class there. Have you seen anything, you know, around that theme that resonates?
Yeah, and I think, as you say, where those trends in the traditional pockets of capital are going to continue, just in terms of the diversified nature of these large ones and having to match their liability needs, et cetera, I think private credit is always going to be a part of that. You know, I think what you'll see is that, you know, a lot of these groups have their own dedicated teams. You know, it's less of a, especially at the large institutional side, which are looking at some of these types of funds, you know, they have dedicated teams that are focused on it, where when you have, say, a singular, you know, a smaller in kind of investment office where they're looking at their portfolio holistically, then you might see some cycling, right? Saying, look, okay, we're seeing relative opportunities or relative value in private credit or private debt versus maybe infrastructure or real assets or, you know, private equity. And they can flow their allocations a little bit more quickly, or they're more opportunistic. Whereas, you know, with the large ones, you tend to have, this is your group, this is your budget, it's going to be this percentage of the portfolio. If the portfolio is growing, your allocations will be growing, but they're making the same decisions as they were. So their appetite necessarily is, I wouldn't say, is increasing, because a lot of these firms, their entire LP appetite is for private credit, because that's what they're focused on. You know, I don't think we're seeing huge movements in terms of this cycling into the asset class, but I think there's always people that are going to be opportunistic looking for certain things as the market changes. And as I said, I'm as a very big proponent of having a diversified portfolio, in which this should be a, you know, a significant position, not significant, but like, you know, a good position in your portfolio to drive some returns in all different kind of market conditions.
Yeah. Okay. And also, whilst we're still on the subject of investors, so, you know, we're seeing probably GPs striving to appeal to different investor bases or growing investor bases. We're seeing more open-ended type vehicles. And of course, this isn't just private debt. It's across alternative assets. Seeing more of an appeal being made to retail investors rather than just institutional. How successful do you think managers have been so far in making their appeal to these kind of investor bases and enabling them access to their offerings? Are you expecting much of a sort of boost behind that particular dynamic in 2024?
Absolutely. I think the private wealth channel has been and through 23 and continues to be one of the areas that a lot of managers are focused on. You know, I think it's one of those things that when, especially through 23, was, as we just talked about, the difficult fundraising environment, looking around to see what pools of capital were increasing, right? And it was very few pools of capital that were increasing. So when they're thinking about their next fund generation and increasing AUM, et cetera, they're kind of looking about, where's this going to come from? And the private wealth channel is, you know, still is and is underallocated to the private markets. And I think the managers are really trying to figure out how to access this pool of capital. It's something that we've been focused on for quite some time, and having a systematic approach to this channel. How do you really kind of understand the different dynamics of various platforms and be able to do that in a systematic way? And we've seen some real success for these pieces. You know, I think where the ones that have had the most success in these quote unquote earlier days part of it tend to be the blue chip household names. You know, when you think about the dynamic of that channel, in which the onboarding process looks typically similar to a normal LP, right? You're working with a group that is responsible for doing their due diligence, asking the same kind of questions, digging in, the same processes. But once it's onboarded onto the channel, and especially for, you know, financial advisors or wirehouses, where it goes out to the financial advisors at the thing, and they need to be able to, the ones that to describe it, to be able to push it to their clients specifically. I think it's just an easier thing to understand where you're talking about a, you know, a CDNR or, you know, any of the blue chip names that are household names, larger kind of, again, that flight to quality. So those are the ones that have had probably the first initial success. But what we're starting to see is that more sophistication, more knowledge of the space. And that's part of our job, right? To go and talk to those financial advisors and be a source of information, education, research, whatever it might be, so that they can have an informed conversation down the line. And you're starting to see that where they're, I wouldn't say tired of some of these names, you know, another Blackstone or BlackRock comes onto the market or whatever it might be. You know, I think they're also looking for new pockets of opportunities, you know, either niche strategies or niche geographies. That does take, as you say, more education and more pieces. But that as a channel, absolutely, I think it's going to be a very important part of the fundraising story going forward.
So broadly speaking, sounds fairly optimistic looking forward. Things are getting a bit busier. Any sort of last observations or thoughts that people should take away with them about the fundraising environment as it is and looking forward to the coming period?
Yeah, absolutely. And I always have my LP hat on coming from that side of the world. And I think there's a lot of great opportunities out there, but it does take probably a little bit more work to uncover those. And, you know, my previous boss, Andrew Auerbach, who I have a huge amount of respect for, she's really well known in the industry and great thoughts, is, you know, she always kind of said that in times of difficulties are when managers really show their worth, right? You know, whatever there is. You know, when markets are going extremely well, you know, everyone seems to do well. And I think during this period where you are starting to see, you know, changes in interest rates, a lot of uncertainty, you can start to see the managers of quality. They kind of stand out a little bit more easily. But to go and really be able to do the work and understand that and kind of go behind, you know, really ask those more pointed questions. But because I think there's a lot of great opportunities out there and managers and, you know, kind of how it fits in within your portfolio. You know, I think the balance is in the hands of the investors at the moment in terms of what's out there. There's a lot of great opportunities. But to be able to uncover those in spaces is still taking a lot of work.
A very good note to finish on, and I think gives people some hope. thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. That's been really, really interesting to hear both retrospectively about the fundraising challenges of last year and also your thoughts about the current market and what might lie ahead. Thank you very much.
That again was Darius Creighton, a director at Raymond James Sabeel Capital. For more episodes, head to privatedebtinvestor.com/podcast or search and subscribe to the Private Debt Investor podcast wherever you like to listen. I'm Andy Thompson with PDI. Thanks for listening.